my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 437, to be broadcast on Wednesday, April 16th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening here on Facebook Live right now, you can comment right down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Two items, because we can't just rant about one thing, right? We got to rant about a couple. First of all, number one, tariffs. Yeah, I've been talking about tariffs a lot because, you know, everything in the bike business is going to go through the ceiling. Everyone's freaked out that I talk to that's in the bicycle industry right now. They're very, very concerned because the tariffs are going to raise the price of everything that is coming into the country, because guess what? Everything comes from outside of this country that has to do with bicycles. Not everything, but pretty much most everything. So, what's it going to mean as far as the chaos for transportation? Hint. Expensive cars, expensive trains, expensive bikes, expensive everything. Flip-flop decision maker and current occupant of public housing in D.C. has removed the tariffs from the essential electronic goods, stating that we don't really make these in the U.S., so therefore we're going to give them a break. So what about bicycles? There's my rant right there. We haven't seen bicycles in the U.S. for decades. Got that? Decades. They've been made over in Asia for a number of years now. So if we're not making them here, and we're not making those electronic items like the one that I'm talking to you on right now, the iPhone, or other various electronic gears like made by all these other companies that are coming out of Asia, then let's take the tariffs off the bicycles too. Bicycles are far more essential than cars are. I said it. It's all there. So, all I'm asking is to be fair where fairness is to be seen. It just seems like it makes a lot more sense, and I don't know. That's my rant of the week. No, it's not. Number two, bike carnage. The carnage is intolerable. Get that? That's a quote from Jamie Raskin on why bike safety is becoming bipartisan. We need to reject any insinuation that it's not a national priority to make local roads safer. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. Yay, Jamie Raskin, for paying attention. It's a good thing. On a positive side, I was gone last week because I completely ran out of time because, unfortunately, we were on a trip and a bunch of things occurred. We're not going to get into that, but I ran out of time to put my show together. So Jason at the radio station was very kind to put something together for me and pull up a past episode. So if you heard a past episode last week, then you're going to hear a current one this week, which is very nice. So we're back from Chicago because my son Greg got married. Yay! Yeah, my son Gary got married. That's positive. That's a beautiful, positive thing. It was a great time, great reception. Got to spend some time in Chicago. Got to see all the bike lanes in action. Lots of good stuff there. Boy, oh boy. They have got their finger on the pulse as far as alternative transportation goes. And also, you know, we used public transportation to get ourselves around. We did not rent a car. We didn't even rent bikes, but we could have. We could have done that too, because there are bikes everywhere in the city. So that's kind of cool. That's my first positive side. Second positive side, Gino and the girls return from Tampa with their 12th national title. Yeah, it's UConn. You know, I broadcast out of UConn. UConn's kind of a thing here. We consider ourselves the basketball capital of the world. That's kind of the joke. Thank you, Dick Vitale, for coming up with that one years ago. And here's the thing. This guy, I got to tell you, you know, I watch a lot of basketball. I watch a lot of sports. I watched the Paris-Roubaix yesterday. We'll talk about that later on. 24 Final Fours, 12 title wins. 50%. If he goes to the Final Four, he's got a 50% chance of winning. The girls were great. Paige Beckers was great. Everyone was great. They were all just, I mean, they were so tight and glued together. Really, really, really nice to see that they all work so well together. If only the rest of the world could work that well. Anyway, and the Paris-Roubaix. Wow and wow. First wow, women's race. Second wow, men's race. There's more to come. I'm also going to give you a slight review of the Tour de Flanders, because I was gone last weekend and I didn't get a chance to talk about it. And there were all sorts of interesting things there too. But anyway, we'll give that a quickie wrap up later in the show. Ron's Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips for the Week. How to spend more money on inflating your tires than ever before. Yeah, I know. I went through this a few weeks back, and we talked about expensive ways of putting air in your tires versus other ways of doing it. And but this one takes the cake. And why does it take the cake? Because, well, you'll find out here in a minute. I will get right to it. As I was watching the Paris-Roubaix yesterday, they kept talking about this mechanism that the riders were using, and the mechanism they were using was a way of adjusting the air pressure in their tires while on the bike. Right. Yeah, sounds a little, you know, futuristic. Well, it's not. It's happening. And for the mere price of a very good road bicycle, you can own a set of wheels that will inflate and deflate your tires and regulate your tires while you're riding along. Yeah, it's not the least expensive way to inflate your tires. It is truly the most expensive way to inflate and deflate your tires. But anyway, I'm going to talk about it because I was just blown away by the concept of this thing. And so I did a little research on it because why not? The company is called Grava, G-R-A-V-A-A, and I think I put a link on the Facebook page, so you can check that out, and it'll kind of explain what's going on there. There's a little video link in there, and you can see what you think. It's a YouTube link. Anyway, the thing about this is the mechanism of which the tires are inflated is in the hub of the wheel. They're selling only as complete wheels right now, which is why they are just at a lovely, not affordable price. But you know what? If you're into this and you have to have it, there it is. Great application for gravel rides, great application for cyclocross, great application for the Paris-Roubaix, if you happen to be, you know, seeing 30 some odd sectors of gravel and cobbles that you need to constantly make adjustments in your tire pressure for so you don't pinch flat. By the way, I saw a lot of flat tires yesterday. I don't know if this is really the solution to the problem. I think the solution to the problem is you have to be really, really careful where you ride. And if you smack a tire hard enough, it is going to burp out. If you're using tubeless tires, or it will flatten if you're using clincher tires, or you might just ride through it if you're riding on tubular tires. We're not going to go down that road and have that argument, because the arguments are all out there about how much faster tubeless tires are and how much better tubeless tires. I'm not going to get in the argument. I only know what I know. So, grumpy old guy, Still likes his tubular tires. Oh, and by the way, I've got a nice new set of tubulars sitting right over here. They're cross tubulars. They're 33, I think they're 33 millimeters. So they're a little bit fatter because they are cross tubulars, but I might try, and I know I'll wear them out real fast and I'll wear the knobs out real fast, but I might just try riding them on the road just for grins and giggles and see how it feels, because I like the wide tire idea, and if they'll fit on my bike, I will give them a shot. So we'll see. It's an experiment. Stay tuned and I'll let you know how I feel about that. But I wish that, and again, I'll say it again, because I've looked everywhere for them and I can't seem to find them. I wish that there were a manufacturer out there that would make a nice, real wide road tubular. You know, I love my tubular tires. I want to continue to ride in my tubular tires, but everything you see out there that you can get your hands on seems to be no bigger than maybe 24 to 26 cm wide. So not lovely as far as that goes. But, you know, cross tires, they've got lots of room. They also have lots of tread. It's going to ride a little different, but anyway, it's an experiment. I'll let you know. Once I get myself back on my bike again and start riding more. So anyway, let's go back to this wheel set. All right. to me, I looked at it and I said, how in the world can this happen? Well, somehow, some way, they've engineered a technology inside of the hub that then runs down one of the spokes and to the valve on the bike wheel. And you can control with the push of buttons on the end of your handlebars. It's like a bar end plug that goes in, and you can push a button and you can raise and or lower the pressure in your tire. It communicates by Bluetooth to your computer, or also you could use a separate monitor for that sort of thing, a small monitor for your handlebars. And that's what it does. Adjustable integrated hub with adaptable tire pressure. The wireless control unit includes two shift buttons, so you can go up or go down as far as that goes. Perfect pressure on every terrain, whether you're tackling rough gravel or smooth tarmac. Grava's technology allows you to adjust your tire pressure on the fly, offering both comfort and control no matter where the ride takes you. Very sophisticated item here. The bar end shifter buttons are placed on your handlebars so you can raise and lower the pressure as need be. They are showing this newer one. I saw an original one which was on the bar end. It looks like this one is actually wrapped underneath your handlebar tape, very, very close to your brake lever, so you can just do it right there. That would be a definite positive, because then you don't have to go fiddling around with the end of your handlebars, therefore possibly causing yourself to crash or whatever. But anyway, it's intriguing. You ought to check it out. It's kind of cool. They make them for basically cyclocross bikes primarily and gravel bikes primarily. That's kind of what they're looking at. And I'm sure that they will be chasing down mountain bike technology here at some point too. Although the mountain bikes tend to have less of a problem with this sort of thing and less of a need for it. Whereas if you're riding gravel, racing gravel, or cyclocross, that would be a more immediate concern. The only drawback that I get from it is it seems that there is a time delay on this as far as how quickly you can inflate or deflate your tire. That's the only thing I see about it that might need some improving in the future. But hey, you're asking for your hub to inflate your tire, so it's not going to be perfect, but it's an interesting idea. And so I saw it and I went, you know what? I got to talk about this because this is kind of cool. It's definitely very geeky, very cool. And they kept talking about it on the commentators kept talking about it on the Paris-Roubaix, and how, you know, the women and the men are both using this and how cool it is. And and that they can, you know, they've got this infinite adjustability on their bikes to be able to change their air pressure. And, you know, did it make it so there were less flats in the Paris-Roubaix? That one's up for grabs. I didn't do the research, so you can do that. You can go to Professor Google and see if Professor Google can answer that question for you. But I don't know. I would have to do a search on that to figure it out. I just think it's a neat idea and not something that you will see on my bike in the immediate future, seeing as I am still the old curmudgeon that rides tubular tires occasionally and also still has cables on his bike and doesn't have disc brakes on his bike. I know. I hear it from everyone. I don't want to hear it from you. But, you know, you can comment. You can comment down here below. Or you can send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Anyway, let's...
Do you want to hear from them or not?
No, they can... Yeah, you can comment. I want to hear from Franny. I want to hear. What do you feel? How do you feel about this crazy way of inflating and deflating your tires? By the way, this is not the standard way that you would inflate your tires before going for a ride. This is simply adjustments while you're on the fly. That's all it is. So anyway, that's what we got. Very, very interesting. The name of the company is Grava, G-R-A-V-A-A. I'll let you do your research and see what you think. So, content. Okay. Back to the comment from Jamie Raskin. We need to reject any insinuation that it's not a national priority to make local roads safer. Yay, Jamie Raskin. Absolutely, positively.
He must ride a bike.
Well, he must ride a bike. I didn't really research that, but you could check that out, Franny. I'm not sure. But the fact that he is looking at that as, you know, this is a thing, you know, it's admirable. All right. So anyway, this was brought up on a Streets blog episode here. I was reading through and I saw this, and it talks about every other day it seems the White House is clawing back federal support for bike lanes or shrinking the role of Washington building local active transportation projects, even as the deaths of people outside of cars make national car crash statistics explode. For Representative Jamie Raskin from Maryland, though, that means that it's more important than ever to pass legislation that hands states more power to use their federal funds to save vulnerable road users' lives. And for the first time, he's being joined in his efforts by colleagues across the aisle. Jamie, I am giving you the bow here. If you're listening to this, I'm just bowing in front of my computer screen here. But if you can see me, you know what I'm doing here. What a great idea. Wonderful. And guess what? They're all talking about it together, bipartisan. This is a big thing. So, yeah, along with two Republican co-sponsors, Raskin recently reintroduced the Sarah DeBink Langenkamp, remember her? She was killed when she was riding her bike to work, and she was the legislator. Man, it's a long story. Anyway, and her husband set up a whole fund and all that. We talked about it probably a few years ago on the show. But this allows state and local communities to fund the construction of bike lanes and other proven safety countermeasures built under the Transportation Alternatives Program using 100% federal money rather than having to scrounge up that 20% match that they often can't afford. That's the problem. You have this idea and you want to implement it in your state or your community, and you still got to cough up the 20% to make it all happen. This is 100% federal money while it lasts. And because that bill would allow local, regional, and metropolitan governments to nominate projects directly rather than leaving them to the mercy of the higher levels of government that might be hostile to biking and walking for ideological reasons, it's vaulted to the top of many advocates' legislative wish lists while gaining support from conservatives who understand the value of letting communities guide their own road safety efforts. And so anyway, Streets Blog sat down with Representative Raskin to talk about why Congress is coming together around this critical issue. So kind of cool stuff. I felt like I really needed to make a shout out here. We've got some really, really positive movement here in D.C., which is huge because nothing is moving in a great direction these days. So I always love to see things like this. So a huge, huge shout out to Jamie Raskin for pulling this together and making it happen. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But when you hear more of what I have to say a little bit deeper into the show, you'll understand why it just makes sense. And so I'm gonna move on from this, and we're gonna go on to another Streets Blog. Streets Blog had all sorts of good stuff over the last couple weeks, and I couldn't resist going here. So there is a video that has been put out, and it was put out last Friday on April 11th, and it just a few days back. And it was put out by our friends at the Global Cycling Network. And and Ollie was just, you got to watch this. It's on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. I'll try to also share it over to my YouTube page if I can. Sometimes my YouTube page doesn't allow that. I don't understand why, but it's probably because I'm old and don't understand technology, but that's beside the point. I do still, you know, I still have cables and non-disc brakes. Anyway, it's a sign of the times. But anyway, this video was put together, and I got to tell you, it's worth it. It's about 34 minutes in length, I think. Yeah, 34.02, 34 minutes in length. And it's basically entitled "Everything You Know You Thought You Knew About Roads Is a Lie." All right, you might have heard of the law of induced demand, but you haven't as explained to you in a British accent. So all kidding aside, the UK-based Global Cycling Network just put together one of the best videos explainers that the folks at Streets Blog have seen on why countries are wasting billions of dollars on junk roads and why we need to reduce motorist lane capacity and open up space for other ways of getting around if we want to solve some of society's most pressing problems. The first 25 minutes are perfect for those who've never really questioned the idea that more asphalt is always a good investment. And U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, whose public comments suggest he doesn't understand why there's so much congestion in America, but when even veteran Streets Blog readers stay tuned for a mind-blowing mini interview with Dutch author favorite, this is Marco T. Brommelstrup, and about how even the Netherlands has brought moto normality more than you think, and why we must question all the values that are under transportation choices. Anyway, it's a great video. You got to check it out. I listened to the whole thing this morning, and I'm just really impressed with how well it was put together. And it's a worthy look. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about this because there's just so much going on with transportation and in this country and also all over the world. And it's all very, very, very car-centric and all very, very, very... There's bicycles in the world? Really? There's people who ride bicycles for transportation? Really? There's people who walk for transportation? Really? Yeah. Yeah, really. Really. So, cars get billions of dollars in hidden subsidies. So, if we're looking to do some cuts and make things a little more efficient, maybe we might want to take a look at this, because I got some information to share with you guys today from the research I did, and I think you'll find interesting. So, this comes from a website called The Medium and medium.com, and it is basically talks about the massive amounts of expansion of highways and public transport, construction of cycling infrastructure, restrictions on cars to create walkable communities, inevitably is on a comeback into the question of public spending. The general discourse of these topics assumes that you make any of these choices, it would be costly because the government would have to subsidize these alternatives. And the truth is actually in the reverse. The quicker governments can get us out of cars and constrain auto-centric development, the more money they will save. Hey, anyone in Washington listening to this? Please. Public transport not only involves public investment, but its operation tends to require an operating subsidy. The percentage of the trip cost is not covered by fares. Those opposed to greater transit investment seize on this as an argument against transit, as evident as that it is inherently uneconomical and unworkable, but that ignores the massive public investment that was necessary to construct the infrastructure for automobile and the ongoing subsidies that make it possible. Suburbs, roads, highways, cars, oil, gas, these are just a few of the highly subsidized pieces that make the auto-centric cities possible. Yeah, think about it. Your fuel is subsidized. Your cars are subsidized. This is all money that's going into keeping you in the great American automobile. And it is money that could be spent in a much more efficient and worthwhile way. Not to mention the fact that it's going to bring up the health and well-being of your communities and the world in general. Yeah, I know I'm bike talk. I talk about bicycles all the time. I talk about the reasons why. These are reasons why. This makes a lot more sense. Consider the suburbs, the sprawling neighborhoods that house most Americans that were not a free market invention, but the result of government policy. The New Deal, created by the Federal Housing Administration, FHA, in 1934, which was given the dual task of reviving the housing market and making homeownership more attainable. It's hard to imagine today, but before that period of mortgages were hard to obtain and they had to be paid back within a few years and deposits were upwards of 50% of the purchase price. The FHA made several decade mortgages and low deposits possible. And by having the government guarantee them. But it went farther than that. The FHA established standards through which would access houses eligibility for mortgages, which made auto-centric development highly favored and transit-oriented development much more difficult, i.e., take people out of the cities, move them to the suburbs, and give them a way to get back and forth. What does that create? It creates an independence, yes. It creates a lovely chem lawn, yes. Yeah, I know, I had to say that. But it also creates more traffic and more congestion and more cars on the road. There's a huge complex that's going in up at the University of Connecticut. It's off campus. You should see the parking garages that are going next to this 800 unit development. Okay, 800 units equals, now, if there's only one student that has a car that's going into these units, they're like 3 and 4 bedroom apartments. If there's only one student that has a car for each unit, that's 800 cars. Got that? 800 cars. Where do you put them on the road? Our roads are already congested. And I live out in the country, man. I live out in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut. But I can tell you, we have a rush hour. We do have a time when our main road that goes through campus, 195, is completely congested with automobiles. And it takes anywhere from, well, without the cars there, it probably takes about 3 or 4 minutes to get from one end of campus to the other end of the campus. When the cars are all letting out, the students are going back to their dorms, whatever they're doing, the congestion goes up to as much as 10 or 15 minutes for that same 1 mile of road. So that's just to give you an idea what happens when congestion happens, and congestion does happen. So making this urban development outside of the cities, of course, causes a huge problem, especially if you don't allow the infrastructure of mass transportation, being buses and or trains, and also the availability of safe bike lanes available. And all you do is you just put more cars on the road. More cars on the road creates more congestion, creates more pollution, creates more wear and tear on the infrastructure, creates more costs to communities. It's a backward system. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So suburban development also requires an expansion of road network, which is followed by the construction of the interstate highway system that, beginning in 1956, ultimately cost about $500 billion. And to build more than 47,000 miles, 76,000 kilometers of road. Meanwhile, China's 13,670 miles, or 22 kilometers of high-speed rail, cost $360 billion. Math here, math time, $500 billion, $360 billion. Which is more cost-effective, obviously? So, and the other thing that meshes really well, and you ask anyone in Europe and they can tell you all about it, is bicycles and trains go together real nicely. They're basically a great way. If you got to go a distance, you bring your bike on the train, you go where you got to go, you ride your bike from the train station to wherever you're going. It all works together. So it's a really, really good system. So, there's more. In 2015, maintenance on a mile of national highways, maintenance cost $28,000 on 1 mile of national highway, while maintenance on a mile of local road was estimated to have a range of $1,528 to $23,651 in Washington State. Those high ongoing costs are why a number of countries are starting to unpave roads. They simply can't afford to maintain them, especially with an estimated national road maintenance backlog of $420 billion. So you gravel riders, look up, man. This is good. We're going to turn all our roads into gravel because it costs too much to keep them paved. There's an idea. Probably not. And what about the cars themselves? Automakers have historically received government subsidies or bailouts. Tesla, for example, has received $1.3 billion in support from Nevada, over $100 million more from California, and every one of its cars comes with a federal credit. So, the subsidy for free car parking amounted to $127 billion in 2002. $127 billion to park your car. To park your car. This is ridiculous. And a policy that, and I have more on that in just a minute, because I went down a rabbit hole on this and I just couldn't leave it alone. So the United States spends an estimated $26 billion a year to subsidize fossil fuels. Are we getting anywhere here? Is anyone catching on to where I'm going? Of which $15 billion is dedicated to oil and gas production. Nearly half of the discovered oil that isn't yet developed is dependent on those subsidies. While that might already seem like a lot of money, it doesn't count on the many billions more spent on military actions to preserve U.S. access to foreign oil, particularly in the Middle East, which should the $2 trillion cost of the Iraq War be factored into any of these figures? You guys can decide as far as this goes. This is absolutely obscene. It's an obscene amount of money, and it's only so that you can drive your precious car from one place to another place without a problem. What happened when we put together the interstate highway systems is that people started not driving their cars more, they started driving their cars longer. They increase their range, and when they increase their range, then they started driving their cars more. It's a ridiculous amount of money. Automobility costs the EU $500 billion a year, while cycling and walking produce the benefits of $24 billion and $66 billion. These results show the true social benefits of cost savings that would accompany a large-scale shift from auto-centric development to transit-oriented development, where people can get more easily around in their communities without the need for a car. Consider the Netherlands. A country of just 17 million people saves an estimated $23 billion and avoids 6,500 premature deaths a year as a result of its high bicycle use, which is possible because its cities have been redesigned to promote that mode. This is not rocket science. This is quite honestly, it's just common sense. Common sense is a great thing. And when exercised and used properly, things can go really, really well. So anyway, there it is. That's your general cost there. But I'm not done yet. Subsidizing congestion. Federal tax subsidies for commuter parking add 820,000 cars to the roads, often during rush hour in America's biggest, most congested cities, at a cost to taxpayers of $7.3 billion a year, according to the Subsidizing Congestion, a report issued by the Civic Philanthropy Transit Center and Frontier Group. The report finds that the tax benefit for commuter transit use, while beneficial, only weakly counteracts the negative effects of the parking subsidy. The report calls for detailed evaluation of commuter tax benefits and reforms to better align tax incentives with the nation's overall transportation goals. So what we're doing is we're subsidizing cars. We're subsidizing the fuel that goes into them. We're subsidizing the roads that they drive on. We're subsidizing the places where you park your car. And we're not doing anything for bicycles. So you can see where I'm going here. I've been kind of saying this through the whole show. We got to change the way we think, folks. This is it. Get out, get loud, you hear me at the end of the show. You'll hear it at the end of this show. It's time to get out and start talking about this. This is a simple, simple solution. It is a healthy solution. It is an economically positive solution. It will save money. It will cut billions of dollars, billions, not $1,000 here, $1,000 there, although yes, it will, but this is going to cost all of us a lot less money if we just pay attention to it. The almighty car has had its run. That's what I got to say. The internal combustion engine has long had its run. It's way overdue. It was overdue 30 years ago. I remember talking about pollution back in and the environmental issues of cars and trucks back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, I've been alive that long. So I remember that. And if you have not, and I repeat, if you have not put yourself behind the exhaust pipe of a car that was manufactured back in those times, you have no idea how much cleaner they've gotten, but they're still dirty. They're still dirty and they're still doing a lot of damage and they're not healthy. They really aren't. So it's time to rethink the way we build roads, the way we build communities, and put the bicycle back to work where it belongs, because the bicycle is truly the answer to a lot of the problems that we have in this world. Yeah, I'm very one-sided. I will admit it. I still own a car, so I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. So there's that too. But the fact is that there is a simple solution to start reducing costs. And if you just start using your bike a little bit more, you'll be able to make that reduction happen. So the tax benefits that are for commuter transport, they only weekly counteract the effects of the parking subsidy. The parking thing is just gross. I cannot believe what we have here for parking. So currently, employers may offer their employees several commuting benefits that are excluded from the calculation of employees' taxable income. Employer-provided or employer-paid parking at or near a workplace is valued at up to $250 a month. Hey, how about if I ride my bike to work every day? Will you give me $250 a month? There's a question. Have you asked it yet? Why not? Go for it. Employer-paid transit passes or vanpool benefits valued up to $130 a month. Employer-paid bicycle commuting expenses are up to $20 a month. Where's the fairness here? $250 a month if I drive a behemoth down the road that pollutes and causes all sorts of problems and destroys the infrastructure because it's big and heavy and nasty and causes congestion, or $20 a month for my bicycle? Got it backwards, folks. Got it backwards. Change this. So these tax-saving parking and transit benefits reduce the taxes paid by the participating employers and employees. The parking and transit benefits may be provided either as a supplement to an employee's pay or in a place of salary or wages. Workers may claim both the parking and transit benefits the same month, but may not combine the bicycle commuting benefit with any other benefits. Boy, do we have this backwards. This is so screwed up. And the parking tax benefit adds approximately 820,000 automobile commuters to the roads, traveling more than 4.6 billion additional miles per year, because the parking benefit, tax benefit, delivers the biggest savings to those working. Parking and tax benefit represent $7.3 billion of subsidy to subset automobile commuters in the form of avoided federal income and payroll tax payments and state income taxes. Yeah, if your employer is giving you free parking, guess what? They're getting a tax break for it. Not you, they are. They're getting the tax break, but you're not getting the tax break. All you're getting is free parking. And is that free parking worth it? Well, not if they're going to build more parking lots. It's a real, real problem. So this is where I went with it. I'm going to back off on it now. I think I've beaten this poor dead horse enough. There's changes that really, really need to be made. Look at the cost of the pavement alone. It's just ridiculous how much money we spend to drive and park cars. And if we were using bicycles and parking bicycles, 10 bicycles in one parallel parking space. Think about that. 10 bicycles in one parallel parking space. Not very many vehicles will hold 10 people, first of all. And rarely do I see a very large vehicle with 10 people in it, unless it's a bus or a transit vehicle of some sort. Anyway, that's it. I'll stop now. I'm going on because there was some great racing going on here, and I really need to talk a little bit about it. 2 weeks ago, we had the Tour de Flanders. Flanders is one of the classics. It's a great race. It's a classic for many, many reasons. And Tadej Pogačar decided that he wanted to grab a classic win. So he went out and he claimed the win at the Tour of Flanders. And Lada Kopecky also on the women's side ended up winning that race. Tadej Pogačar held off defending champion Matthew Vanderpoel to claim his second Tour of Flanders title. Three-time Tour de France champion, raced for the UAE Team Emirates, completed the 270 kilometers. I said that right. 270 kilometers. Add it up. Figure out the mileage. Fran, do some math for me. It's a long time to be on a bike. But get this. He was only on his bike for 5 hours and 58 minutes and 41 seconds. Pogačar finished just over 1 minute clear of Denmark's Mads Pedersen, who was second, and Dutchman Matthew Vanderpoel came in third, having recovered from a crash with 127 kilometers to go. Tour of Flanders, which began in 1913, known as De Ronde, is a historic one-day race held in Belgium every spring and highlighted with climbs and cobbled sectors. It's actually kind of a warm-up to the classic of all classics, otherwise known as the Paris-Roubaix, which was this past weekend. So Vanderpool actually, when he crashed, he rejoined the peloton within 10 miles of his crash and tussled with Pogacar through the hills, because there are some hills there. Lotte Kopecky became the first to win 3 Tour de Flanders titles, but the Slovenian pulled away with a race-winning attack on the final ascent and with around 15 kilometers to go, and cruised along flat roads to a solo victory. Chasing pack sprinted, remaining medal positions with Belgian. And this is, they've got this article mixed up because they say Wout van Aert missing out on a podium finish. Anyway, in the women's race, let's see, who else is here? Riding for Team SD Works, 29-year-old claimed victory by thrilling style by winning a 4-way sprint finish ahead of France's Pauline Ferron-Prévol, Leanne Lepere of Germany, and Poland's Katarzyna Nulonder-Fini. It was a crazy race with lots of crashes in the beginning, said Kopecky. When it went with the four of us, I was pretty confident. So again, it turned into kind of one of those bunch of people together at the end, women's races. Some of the women's races are that way, but I'm starting to see a little bit more. I'm becoming a little more inspired by women's racing, because I got to tell you, I watched the women's Paris-Roubaix, and there's French great Ferron-Prévol wins the women's Paris-Roubaix.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Pauline Ferron-Prévol has battled through sickness and a crash to win the women's Paris-Roubaix race for the first time with a well-timed solo breakaway. 33-year-old cycling great from France added to prestigious and grueling Roubaix Classic to her Olympic mountain bike gold medal at the Paris Games last year and the 2014 World Road Race title. I gotta say, it was a heroic breakaway. It was really, really cool. She was so sick the last few days before the race that she wasn't even sure in that morning that she was going to participate. And she got on her bike and she pulled it off. And it was really fun to watch, because what I saw is, and what I'm starting to see from all the way from the Olympic road race on, a lot more attacking going on, a lot more, we're not going to all just wait until the very end and then sprint to the finish going on. It was tactical. It was really well done. She did just an amazing job, and it was a fun race to watch because there was so much to it. I was talking to someone this morning up at the community center, and he was all over, did you see the Paris-Roubaix yesterday? And we talked about it. I said, have you seen the women's race yet? He said, no. I said, you got to go home and you got to look up the women's race. You got to watch the women's race. I said, it was extremely cool and well done and very exciting. So anyway, good stuff. Good stuff. And then we move on to, Matthew Vanderpool. It's all about Matthew again. Good old Matthew. He has been winning so many of the classics lately. He is the wattage cottage of all times. This man has got more power than anything else. And of course, Vanderpool also has a background of cyclocross, which goes way back to his teenage days when he and Wout van Aert were competing against each other back in the cross days. And so his bike handling skills are extremely good. And of course, when you're riding the Paris-Roubaix and you have all of those cobbles, and there are just so many sectors of cobbles that it helps to be able to handle your bike. If you happen to watch the race yesterday, then you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, then you might want to come back to this podcast a little later on so that you can go check it all out. But because there's major spoiler alerts going on here. But this is the first time the former world champion is the first rider to win the Paris-Roubaix three times in a row since the Italian Francesco Moser back in 78 to 80. While about 20 seconds clear on the cobbled section, a bottle thrown from low down in a throng of spectators struck him in the face. Who on earth comes to a bike race to do that? What are you playing at? Said Rob Hatch of TNT Sports. And it says, you're just scumbags, added his colleague Adam Blythe. I can't believe someone's doing this. It's just beyond belief. Yeah, you know, it's weird. You know, they don't like him, so they throw a bottle at him. Give me a break. So he wins a lot. You know why he wins a lot? Because he's really good. He's really, really good at what he does. He's a classic rider. He's king of the classics right now, and he's doing really well. So anyway, despite his lightweight, a big disadvantage on the cobbles, and a scare from on Vanderbilt's first offensive move, Pogacar dealt several blows until making a fatal mistake. So Pogacar was with him at the near the end. And I think they still had like two, maybe three cobble sections to go. And as always, you know, Matthew's riding steady and strong, and he went into a hard right-hand turn on cobbles, stayed on the cobbles, kind of scooted over towards the edge. Pogacar went a little bit further out and got himself into the grass and lost control of his bike. Down he goes. And when he went down, he lost 16 seconds. And that's when the race began at the very, very end. It continued to get bad later on when Pogacar ended up getting a flat tire. There were so many flats yesterday. So many flats. Always so many flats. And that cost him a little bit more time. And now there was a minute difference. And Vanderpool was able to win the race with a good chunk of time and lots of room when he came into the Velodrome in Roubaix. Great race to watch. Lots of fun. Really great. Fran was down doing the Paris-Roubaix on Zwift yesterday.
Yep.
And watching the race on TV. That's kind of funny. So anyway, yeah, there it is. Anyway, great race. More great racing coming out of Europe. Really, really good stuff. And you know, I can't wait to watch more. And guess what's coming up really, really, really soon? Yeah, it's right. The Giro is coming. Yeah, I know. My favorite race of all the races, the Giro d'Italia. It's just a great, great race. Anyway, let's see. What else do we have here? Flanders, we covered that. Pro calendar, we haven't gotten there yet. Next show, I promise, a 2025 Giro update. I'll talk to you about the start list of the Giro d'Italia. I'll talk to you about hopefully the stages of the Giro d'Italia, and we can get all Giro'd out. It's good stuff. Love these big races. So the real question here is, who's going to win the Giro? Because I don't know that we've got, I don't think Pogacar's going to the Giro this year. I think he's focused on the Tour de France. And again, I'll update you on that a little bit more next week, and we can discuss that a little on the show. But there's the Giro is tending to not have the same players in it as we've had in the past. And I think Pogacar is focusing really more on both the Tour de France and maybe even the Vuelta a España. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Wout van Aert is in that play. There's a number of big players that are going to be in there. We'll see what happens, because I think it's going to be an interesting classic, and Grand Tour season. So I'm real psyched about that. Let's go right on to events here. I've got a few events here, a local one, which I want to mention because they have contacted me about talking about e-bikes. And it is the Hampton Energy Fair and Electric Car and Bike Show on Saturday, May 3rd. So if you're from around this area, you may want to check it out. It's at the Hampton Elementary School from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and that will be on Saturday, May 3rd. And you'll learn a lot about electric cars and bikes and other various things. So it's kind of cool, kind of a cool thing. I was honored to be asked to do that. The Ride of Silence, of course, is back. That's Wednesday, May 21st, 7 p.m. worldwide, always the third Wednesday in May. And we will have our local presentation of that with the great help of the organizer, Kevin Mahan, who is gathering everyone up at the Mansfield Community Center and Town Hall parking lots. Overflow parking is going to be available over at E.O. Smith, which is right next door. So if you want to come out, let's go with a crowd this year. Let's get out there and really make some noise, or no noise at all, because it is the Ride of Silence. If you don't know anything about the Ride of Silence, you can go online and check it out. It is a worldwide event, and it's really important for, if you don't do anything else for advocacy at all this year for bicycles, show up to the Ride of Silence and you'll have checked that box off, and I'll be very happy with you. So that would be a really, really nice thing. This year's Ride of Silence will be at 7 p.m. That's when we will roll. We're going to gather before that, 6:30 to 6:45 for announcements, and that's at 4 and or 10 South Eagleville Road, Storrs, Connecticut. And it's a rain or shine event, and nobody goes faster than 10 or 12 miles an hour. It's only 3 miles. Helmets are mandatory. Love to see you. On May 31st, 2025, the Best Buddies Boston to Hyannisport ride is happening. That's a 100, a 55, and a 20-mile ride. I have done it for the last couple of years with a buddy on the back of my tandem. I plan on going back again this year as well, as long as my health is good. Hopefully Gabe is listening and is getting himself in shape to get going back on that tandem again, because we're going to do it a third year in a row now. It'll be a lot of fun. Last year's pro guest was, he said, this is the guest rider, "I have ridden many charity events around the world, but Best Buddies truly impressed me. They produce perhaps the safest, smoothest, and best organized event I've ever ridden." You know who said that? Alberto Contador. Yeah, for real. He was there. This year, it's going to be Sir Mark Cavendish. Yeah. So I get to meet Mark Cavendish this year. That'll be exciting. Really good. So finishing points. I'm going to read this clip off again. I've done it for the last few episodes, but this is from the League of American Bicycles. "Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making biking an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling." I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking that car or truck for a day and ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's giggling in the background. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below. And or you can send me an email on to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. it really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!